Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Sloan. For every successful person, there's a very good chance there were some loving, supportive parents involved. Mostly our culture likes to credit moms, which is understandable, but as the proud father of two kids that are both pursuing their passions, one for science, the other for golf, I know that dads are important too. So I reached out to some of my successful friends in the science community and asked if they'd like to participate in a series of interviews with their fathers. On this program, you'll hear from three sets of them. We'll be joined by David and Lester Grinspoon, Diana and Bill Cowern, and Alan and Leonard Stern. In our conversations, each will share reminiscences from their childhoods, what the dads remember about the kids, and what the kids learn from their dads. So join us for this Father's Day special on Blue Dot. Our first guests are David and Lester Grinspoon. David is an astrobiologist and senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute in Arizona. He's the author of several books, including co-authoring Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto, along with his co-author Alan Stern, who we'll also hear from later on in the program. His father is Lester Grinspoon. Lester is an associate professor of psychiatry emeritus at Harvard Medical School. He's known both for his pioneering work on schizophrenia and especially for his cannabis activism as the author of the book Marijuana Reconsidered that was first published in 1971.
Nobody has ever died from cannabis. You cannot find a case in the world literature.
David joined us via Skype, and Lester by telephone from his home in Massachusetts.
First of all, David, I'm curious, what was it like growing up with a pretty famous dad? I knew I was aware of him as a kid growing up in the 70s.
I think everybody sort of gets used to the circumstances of their upbringing and thinks that it's normal, even when it's not. And then later on, when you're out in the world, you have more perspective and you realize, wow, I had kind of an unusual upbringing in some ways. But, it wasn't so much that he was famous, but it was also the crowd that he hung out with, that was very stimulating. A lot of family friends were notable scientists or really interesting people in different fields in the Boston scientific community. So it was very stimulating, and I guess I just thought that's what like adults were like in general. We're all these like scientists working on fascinating books and projects. But later on, I think I gained some perspective and realized, wow, that was really pretty amazing community that I grew up in.
Wow. And you were a pretty amazing kid to grow up. To help grow up.
And one of those friends of yours, Lester, was the inspiration for this program, which is called Blue Dot, named after Carl Sagan's famous Pale Blue Dot essay.
The Pale Blue Dot, right.
Yeah, and so I'm curious to hear about, how did that relationship between you and Carl, what was the nexus of that with you, David? Because I know he was very inspirational to you.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, he was around a lot, and it was kind of extended family. In fact, I grew up calling him Uncle Carl and kind of thinking he was my uncle. And in a sense, functionally, he kind of was. It was really cool. I mean, this was back before he was super famous, before Cosmos and all of that. But it was really neat having my dad's best friend be this astronomer who was – very enthusiastic and gifted about talking about space. And sometimes we would do things like go down to the Harvard Observatory where Carl would be running, the public observing night, or go to a planetarium and I'd get to run the controls. And so that was definitely a very exciting part of my childhood.
Lester, I'm curious, was there a point when David was growing up where you started to realize it's like this kid really is interested in science and perhaps this is the career he's going to pursue? When did that become kind of a real thing for you?
Well, it became very real for me that he was going to be a very successful person because he was so smart. smart, had such good judgment, you know, everybody loved him. I didn't know about science until a little later on that he would go there. I certainly didn't push him in that direction. He found his own way, and let me tell you, I wish everybody could have kids like I did, like I do.
And a lot of us do have kids we're really proud of, but, you know, no matter how great David was growing up, he must have gotten in trouble at least once. Can you share with us any times when, you know, maybe he crossed that threshold and got in a little bit of trouble? Or maybe, David, do you remember a time?
Oh, boy, do we have to go in that direction?
Yes. Yes, we do. We have to keep it real.
Well, you go ahead, hon.
Well, you know, nobody's got perfect judgment growing up, and it was the 60s, and so, you know, there was rock and roll and drugs going on and stuff. But, you know, I guess I never went too far in that direction to the point where I wasn't able to bounce back.
Lester?
Well, I remember the one time I really got scared was the time we were at Cape Cod at a— suddenly, David, who must have been about 5 or 6 years old, you know, was right by the ocean. We were at the ocean, and suddenly David was gone. And I started searching all that area and finally found him wandering somewhere. And what a relief to discover him. That's the time that stands out that I will never forget, when he just disappeared there. So that's the most traumatic thing that happened to me where Dave was concerned.
That is here's a scary something. Feeling for as a parent. I can relate to that.
Yeah. Here's something sort of humorous, but I do remember once you gave me a talking to because I was reading too much science fiction. I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 11 or something, and at one point you came to me because I was just sort of so obsessed with science fiction, and I remember you giving me a talking to and telling me, you know, there are other kinds of books out there, and at some point you might want to read some of them too.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Lester, for you now, you know, as an older parent, and, you know, with a grown-up child who's very successful and leading a really productive life, what's it like when you run into your friends and other people to talk about your son? Do you feel— we all feel a sense of pride in our kids, but what's it like for you?
Oh, well, like any other parent who's fortunate enough to have a son like David, who was so successful, so creative, and such a wonderful person. It makes us feel very proud, proud of him and proud of ourselves for raising the children we did. We take great pleasure. We follow what he does very carefully. It's a wonderful experience to have a child like David. He's a dream child. That sounds crazy, but...
No, it's very sweet. And David, you know, apples don't fall far from trees, as the expression goes. Tell us some of the things that, you know, now that you're an adult, that you look back on, you know, the parenting you got from your dad.
Well, my dad is a brilliant scientist himself. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways I could answer that question. But in terms of influencing me in science, he's a person who in his career has been very brave and asking a lot of questions and challenging the status quo, always evidence-based and rigorously. So I think in a broad sense from his work and his career, I learned in terms of science, you should question authority, but do so following the evidence, which is something that I'm very proud of him and his career, that he's sort of courageously in the areas he's been involved in, not just psychoactive drugs and marijuana, which he's most famous for, but in his earlier research in schizophrenia and in the psychological effects of nuclear war and other things. He's always applied his science to important cultural questions in a rigorous and courageous way. So that is something I learned from, and I hope I was positively influenced. But also just in a more kind of microcosmic way, his approach to the world taught me a lot. I mean, here's something seemingly trivial, but so we used to do these chores out back, and one of them, we had this swimming pool, and we had to drain it and refill it. And in draining it, he would set up these siphons, and you get the water running in these hoses, and if you have the lower end of the hose lower than the bottom of the pool down a hill somewhere, then once you get the water flowing, it'll keep going. And it seemed like magic to me that you could, without a pump or without any energy source, the water would just spontaneously flow from one end of the hose to the other. But it makes sense because of gravity. And I just remember my dad teaching me about that and how it was really cool. And so I think there are a lot of ways, just because he's a scientific-minded person, that when you're out in the world talking about things and noticing things, that rubs off on you. If I can mention just one other thing, is sure. That my dad has a real love of nature. And, you know, we spent a lot of time out in boats and fishing and walking in the woods. And just the way he observed birds and fish and patterns in the world and appreciated all that nature, I think really rubbed off on me and affected my my worldview a lot.
What's the last time you guys got to get together?
I was up in Boston, I guess about a month ago. The nice thing for me, even though I live in Washington, D.C., and my parents are in Boston, is that the whole family, a lot of the extended family, is concentrated in the Boston area. My brothers and my nieces and nephews live up there, too. So I get up there several times a year, and we get to hang out. And so that's a really nice thing.
Yeah. That's great. Lester, any last words you want to leave us with about parenting a son like David Grinspoon and having him grow up as becoming a scientist?
Well, I tell you, I feel to be one of the most fortunate people in the world because of my children. And David is someone who both Betsy and I are very proud of. He is a true mensch.
Well, he's one of our favorite guests on Blue Dot.
Well, he deserves to be everybody's favorite guest as far as I'm concerned.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you both for joining us for our Father's Day special.
Well, thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk to you, and another opportunity for me to talk to David.
Yeah, thanks a lot for doing this. It's really fun.
If you're just joining us, welcome to our Father's Day episode of Blue Dot. I'm your host, Dave Shlom, and happy Father's Day to my dad, Al. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll continue our Father's Day special when we're joined by Diana Cowern, a.k.a. Physics Girl from YouTube, and her father, Bill Cowern, who joined us from Kauai in Hawaii. Our next guests are a father and daughter pair. Diana Cowern is one of the most popular science communicators on YouTube with her Physics Girl channel.
Hi, this is Diana. You're watching Physics Girl, and this is my dad, Bill.
So do you know what I want to ask you about?
I do.
What is that?
It's about lightning and my experiences with lightning. The first one was when I was probably...
Wait, Dad, wait. What is your experience with lightning?
I was hit.
By lightning.
By lightning, yeah.
Twice.
Yes.
Her father, Bill, is a retired tree farmer and resort owner on the Hawaiian island of Kauai, where Diana also grew up. Diana joined us from Southern California and her dad, Bill, from Kauai. Diana and Bill Cowan, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bill, I'd like to know from you first. You live on Kauai, and I'd like to know how you got there, because didn't you used to originally live in New Hampshire, and was the family raised on Kauai?
We lived in New Hampshire for a while. I grew up in Massachusetts, but moved to New Hampshire because of the taxes. But
I didn't know that.
It got a little bit too cold there the older we got. So
you moved over state lines because of the taxes, Dad?
Yeah, I did.
So you're practical.
He's not the only one.
That's funny. I didn't know that. That's why I was born in New Hampshire, because of taxes.
That's right.
Live free or die, Diana.
Live free or die with more money.
You know, as soon as you cross the border, there's a big state liquor store that all the Massachusetts people go to.
I remember that from college, my college years.
What was Diana like as a young child? When did you first start to get indications that you had a really bright young lady on your hands?
They call me Bright Dad. Did you hear that?
I heard that, yeah. Started happening, and I don't remember exactly which grade she was in, but she started to have a propensity toward an unusual view of math. She was looking at math in ways that I hadn't seen anybody do. For instance, and I don't remember how old she was, but it was pretty young. She started off at one point saying, "You know what, Dad? If you're going to multiply times five, all you really need to do is cut it in half and move the decimal point."
Oh,
and
wow.
This is probably, you know, 5 years before you would normally be even thinking about something like that. And as a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever thought of something like that. But I remember thinking at the time, that's unusual.
Were there things that you did as parents that to foster that love of math, or was that just something that just happened organically with her?
My wife, Kathy's pretty bright, and I'm sure that she helped them a great deal. But I don't remember doing anything specifically. I know that she just... Diana was, of my five children, she was by far the most self-driven. It was astonishing sometimes. She just didn't want to stop. And it was pretty obvious that, you know, she wasn't going to be slowed down very early on.
And Diana, could you tell us a little bit about, you know, what was it like, you know, from your earliest memories growing up with your dad? You grew up in a pretty unusual place compared to most kids, you know, living in Kauai, you know, with all that natural beauty around you and the ability to, you know, to be outdoors. You know, it seems to me that that would be something that would be great for a kid growing up to foster their curiosity.
Oh, yeah. One thing that I really liked about the way, I don't remember what you did, Dad, but I remember the way that my mom raised us was sort of like whenever there was a spider or a little creature or something, she would give it almost a personality. She'd be like, "Oh, look at this little spidey." Like, she really encouraged us to love every creature and every little bit of nature and not be scared of any of it. So we would put slugs on our arms when we were kids and let them crawl up, and we thought they were just so cool. And we would go like run after the chickens outside, and we would roll in the mud, and we would, like, my dad would show us fruit trees outside and which ones were edible and what you could do with the different pieces of the trees, like paper bark trees where you could peel off the bark. And I remember, like, drawing little treasure maps on bark from the trees that he was growing. So I feel like they really encouraged us to love every aspect of nature, of living and non-living.
I'm curious too, you living in Kauai and then of course being from Massachusetts, was that part of the decision that you went through, Diana, where you just, did that have anything to do with deciding to go to MIT?
Oh, maybe. I remember when I started sort of showing an interest in math. I remember my dad saying, oh, maybe she'll go to MIT one day. And I was like, what's MIT? I remember his description of it back then was like, oh, that's where the smartest kids went. That's where the nerds went. Which I think maybe put me off from MIT to some extent, because I was like, oh, the nerds went there. But I did have it in my head for a while, as like this place that the smart kids went, and it was like a challenge to get in there and to go to MIT. So maybe, I mean, I do remember him mentioning it when I was a kid. So it could have had something to do with why I ended up there.
And Bill, how did you feel about that when she decided that she was going to go to that place?
I felt great about it. We were pushing another school for a while, but that was financial. But we were thrilled to have her go to MIT, and I remember her calling me about 2 months in, and I asked her how things were going, and she said, "Oh, it's so hard." I said, "Well, you know, you don't have to stay there if you don't want to." She said, "No, I want to stay. I just want you to know it's hard."
You were hoping for her to go to a place with lower tuition, or what?
Well, we had one school in mind where there was no tuition, which was interesting, but it worked out quite well.
Yeah, it certainly did. And I'm very curious about when you started to realize as a parent that, you know, this incredibly bright kid you have that's gone to this prestigious school is starting to make videos, and how that evolved in your head from, you're making videos, what? And then when did it dawn on you that, yeah, she could really make a really neat life out of this?
I had reservations about going to MIT and coming out and starting to make videos. I was a little questioning about that, but I think it was more an issue of not understanding what the potential was, even where that kind of a business was going at the time, which I think she got into it at a very good time. And when she won the Flame Challenge, that was when I believed that she was probably gonna do well.
Hey, you. What is color? Is it this red light? Is it this blue ocean? Is it these egg whites? Yeah, they're not even white. What's up with that? Anyway, there are many more mysterious aspects of color that we're going to figure out. But first, you have to be color.
Huh? And Diana, do you ever remember, you know, having to explain to them, you know, what your plans were and kind of trying to work around that initial skepticism?
Yeah, I do. I think I was pretty, I don't think I ever sort of made this, like, the YouTube video career my sole plan, and I was aiming for just being a YouTuber. I think I was really careful at the way that I approached it, and I was still working other jobs. So I told them about my project, which was really just a hobby back then. And I think I was more honest with my parents than I was with most people about how much I really wanted to do YouTube videos. So they got the unfiltered Diana who wanted this to be my job. But I don't really remember ever saying, you know, like, this is the only thing that I'm going to try. I remember also having worked as an engineer at GE and working at UCSD and working other jobs where I was still sort of doing traditional careers. So I don't remember ever having to explain, like, I've left all of my goals behind. I'm just going for YouTube videos. I think that they only felt that hesitation once I dropped everything else and just started doing YouTube videos.
And Bill, I'm really curious as to now that she's pretty darn successful at it. Do you have a sense that your daughter is, you know, kind of famous? And do you have any experiences with people that you run into that find out that she's your kid? And it's like, yeah, that's my daughter.
She's got a swelled enough head already.
Well,
I'm obviously very proud of what she's doing. And she will tell you that I probably talk about her too much. But
Yeah, I don't think this is good, encouraging him to continue talking about.
Oh, well, we're going to go the other direction real soon, so it's okay.
I am really happy that she got it into a business that she truly enjoys, that she does well at, and that is helping other people as well. That really pleases me. So I've always tried to do things that I wanted to do in my life and been fairly successful at that. They all don't work out, but that's okay. If you're doing things that allow you to stay happy, allow you to be doing what you want to do, and in addition to that, you're also providing a service to other people that is, in many cases, very valuable. I don't know how you can get much better than that.
Well, no child is perfect, and I was wondering if you could share with us, you know, as because she does seem like she was probably a really good kid growing up. I get that sense that she didn't get in trouble a lot. But can you share with us maybe one moment when you had a challenge with her where you got a little upset with her?
No, she only got in trouble once, and I remember.
Okay, well, what was that one?
Well, she and a friend snuck out one night and went over to visit another friend. And he lent them his bicycles when they wanted to ride back kind of late at night. And they didn't want to leave the bikes here, and we have another house that we rent. So they left the bikes there, but I think they left them there at like 1 or 2 in the morning. And when they did, they made too much noise, and of course the people that were in the house thought there was a burglar outside or something, and we got a phone call in the morning while they were still asleep about these bicycles that were there and how it had been disruptive about, you know, 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And then we got a phone call from, I think, the boy's mother, I believe, saying that when she got up, she thought the bikes had been stolen. When she pressed her offspring, he admitted what had happened. And so she called to talk about, you know, getting the bikes back. And so I went down and got the bikes and brought them up the hill and put them on the lanai. And when the kids got up, I just had Diana look over at where the bikes were on this lanai. And I remember her turning around saying, "Oh, crap."
You knew you were busted.
My older kids got in trouble all the time. And She almost never got into anything. So the only other thing that was kind of odd is she was like the perfect child up until her second birthday. I mean, like, perfect. You know, she just didn't do anything wrong. And then for some reason or other, we were kayaking up a river here. It was right on her second birthday, and she all of a sudden got so upset, we couldn't imagine what was going on. She ripped off her clothes and stood in the woods screaming for about an hour. I said, "Well, maybe it's the terrible twos, you know."
They struck immediately.
Yeah.
Well, Diane, I'd like to ask you, now that you're just turned 30, tell me about, you know, what are some of the really good things that your dad has taught you growing up that you'd like to share with us, that, you know, you just the things that you love about your dad?
Oh, I think my dad is an incredible storyteller. Sometimes stretches the facts, but I think that he really, you know, he's a really warm person, and we ran a bed and breakfast when I was growing up, and I always observed him just welcoming everybody into our lives and into our home and being so warm and curious about everybody's culture and upbringing. And I think that was really impactful on me, you know, seeing how curious he was about people who are different than us. I mean, I think both my parents are really, they have a lot of different interests, and they really encouraged us to explore our different interests. I also, you know, both of my parents started their own businesses. So people have asked me if I think that that has had an impact on me sort of doing my own thing and starting my own business. And I don't know how it couldn't have an impact. I mean, I watched them just do what they wanted to with their careers. They really didn't follow the cookie cutter path. They both started their own businesses and pretty unique things. And knowing that they uprooted their entire lives when I was one and my sister was two and moved to the middle of the Pacific Ocean with no idea what they wanted to do for careers, it's just kind of inspiring that, like, you can drop everything and change your life and it's going to be okay. You'll figure something out.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's a beautiful lesson. And Bill, and last thoughts about how you feel about your daughter now that she's all grown up.
She's doing great, and I'm very happy. I'm actually quite blessed. All five of my children have done reasonably well, and I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, it's nothing better as a parent. Also, got to let you know, and I think Diana might remember this, when I watched the video with you talking about being hit by lightning twice, I just immediately picked up on this vibe that, like, this guy is way cool. What a great dad. And the obvious love you have between you, I remember sending an email to Diana saying, it's like, you know, I love your channel and your stuff is great, but the guy I'd really like to meet someday is your dad.
Well, we'll meet sometime.
Diana, I so appreciate you doing this. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us on again, Dave.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's been nice talking with you.
Thanks to Diana and Bill Cowan, and after a short break, we're going to continue our look at fathers and their scientist offspring when we're joined by Alan Stern, the principal investigator for the New Horizons mission, and his father, Leonard. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. Welcome back to Blue Dot's Tribute to Dads for Father's Day. Our next guests are Alan and Leonard Stern. Alan is a world-renowned planetary scientist, most famously for his being principal investigator and driving force behind the New Horizons mission that flew by Pluto in 2015 and the Kuiper Belt object Ultima Thule earlier this year. His father, Leonard, who was a salesperson for a chemical company in Texas when Alan was growing up, joined us from his home in Dallas, Texas by telephone, and Alan joined us via Skype from the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. Alan and Leonard Stern, welcome to Blue Dot.
Well, welcome back, Dave. To having us.
Of course, just to let everybody know, Leonard, you are Alan Stern's father, and I would like to, you know, the whole genesis of this is I was thinking about the notion of formative experiences for kids growing up. For example, my dad, when I was a little guy, and I'm about the same age as Alan, he took me on trips to the Los Angeles Museum of Natural History and the Museum of Science and Industry and Griffith Observatory. And those had a big impact on me and my interests. And I'm wondering, you know, when Alan was growing up, were there any things that you guys did together that, you know, looking back on them, those were important formative experiences for you guys?
Yes, yes. But I will add a little vignette. Alan never said out of his mouth, like most children, Mama, Dada. Reason being, he wouldn't stay asleep. I'd rub his back till I'd go crazy. And I finally found a method that enabled him to go to sleep. I'd take him out in the front yard or the backyard, wherever I could, where the moon was shining, and I would repeat night after night, moon. So the first word out of his mouth was moon.
Wow. And Alan, I bet you don't remember that specifically because you were so little.
I don't remember that, of course. But I do remember my dad encouraging my interest in science quite a bit. I remember him taking me to see a giant scale model of a Saturn V rocket on display downtown.
Yeah, and we made Estes rockets and we made model airplanes and all kind of stuff.
When the moon landings were taking place, and I was, you know, in high school towards the end of that, he would drive me down to Houston. I would be at the NASA Johnson Space Center where, Mission Control is. And that wouldn't have been possible because I didn't have a driver's license. I was too young to travel on my own.
He was a little guy then. Smart. Yeah, and he brought back copious amounts of data from NASA, and it really weighted my car down, but we got about 40 miles from Houston, and we got into the most horrific ice storm you can imagine. We had to sleep in the Salvation Army in a place called Waxahachie, Texas, for 2 or 3 days, because the ice on the road was made them impassable. There were 18 wheels strewn all over the road, upside down, and whatever have you. So we had to stay there.
And Alan, you guys, you grew up in New Orleans, right?
As a child, when I was 11, my dad took a big promotion and moved to the corporate headquarters of his firm, which was in Dallas. So I spent my childhood in New Orleans and my adolescence in Dallas.
Leonard, briefly, can you tell us what did you do when he was growing up? What did you do to make a living?
I went to work for a company that had about 60 people, and when I left, they had about 13,000. And the company had, you know, after I was with them a while, maybe 2 or 3 years, started developing and acquiring other companies, and so we had about 54 divisions, and we became a worldwide organization. And I was in sales. I sold just one division's, and it was chemicals, and there were maintenance chemicals, and it enabled me to call on every type of institution you can even imagine, even to mortuary, which was not one of my favorite fields.
And Alan, for you as a child growing up, you know, what was your sense of, you know, when dad goes off to work, what was your sense of what he was all about?
Well, he was very dedicated and hardworking. And I think my brother and sister and I all really had a great role model for work ethic and persistence and, you know, staying at it. If at first you don't succeed, try again. When I was little and we lived in New Orleans, he was literally in sales, as he described, and he would call on schools and office buildings and power plants and all kinds of institutions to try to meet their needs with this vast array of different types of maintenance and cleaning and lubrication products and just everything you can imagine. And then when we moved to Dallas and he went into executive management, he was traveling quite a bit, getting on airplanes and basically going out in the field where his team of salespeople were all around the area. And he was really training and mentoring and helping strategize for the company, you know, how to grow it to that very large size that they eventually did. And so then I saw him in a very different environment where instead of being the guy making the sales, he was really an executive in the company. And I think I watched and tried to learn what that was all about because, you know, when you're a kid, you never think you're going to grow up and run things. But still, it was so different than what he had done when I was little that I was just fascinated by it.
Were there lessons you learned from, you know, watching how your dad did that, that, you know, you think about now? Because we all have these experiences of as we get older, thinking, oh my gosh, I've become just like my dad. Was there anything like that that you can recall?
Well, I've often thought about how much I travel and get on airplanes in my career, and how much he did for many years when we first moved to Dallas. The other factors aren't really as parallel to a scientific career, and I'm not sure I can really think of any other than that.
And Leonard, I'm really curious to ask you, was there a moment when Alan was growing up where you kind of had the feeling that this kid is special and he just might become a scientist and a space explorer someday? You know, because lots of kids are, you know, they want to be.
Alan has been possessed. I don't know any other term to use, possessed with the space industry since he's pretty much old enough to walk. Anything that excited him was in the space field, and you know it didn't surprise me that that's the endeavor he chose to do. But I asked him one time, "What do you spend most of your time doing?" And Alan said, "I sell." And you know that was a shock to me because what he had to do was sell projects and missions and all kinds of things. And you know, I had never looked at it that way, but I think to this day he still has to do a lot of selling to various companies and organizations, you know, to get them to go with his ideas.
And as a dad, you know, as you've seen his career unfold, what's that like for you when you look back on all those years ago? What's it like for you as a dad to see, you know, how much he's accomplished as your son and as a leader in space exploration for the United States?
Well, it doesn't take a lot for me to brag on him. It's very emotional for me. And I get very teary when I think how much he has accomplished. Because there's no way I can describe the pride I have.
You know, that's wonderful. And I didn't mean to make you cry there, but I love that sentiment. And Alan, can you just kind of let me know, like, looking back on all those years ago, what are you most thankful about your father and his support of you growing up that's led to you being able to do all the wonderful things you've been able to accomplish?
I think what I'm most proud of is the example that he set for myself and my two siblings, and my mom as well. You know, you don't get to choose your parents.
I want to interject this because, you know, for 23 years I got on an airplane and I was not home very much. Left every Sunday and came back on Friday night, and was in the office all day on Saturday. His mama deserves more credit than I do because she was not only the mentor, she was the teacher. I just have to tell you that she spent more time with Alan, his brother and sister, because I just was gone, you know. I tried to set aside time for him, but duties called for me to go, and I had to go.
Gosh, that reminds me so much of all of the astronaut friends that I have from back in that era. And, you know, that was a time when, you know, dads had to go out and be gone and work and work and work. And, you know, moms tended to stay home and be with the kids. And fathers, you know, had to be gone a lot. And that's difficult.
Well, it was difficult. I think it was most difficult probably on my mom. When my dad was home, which I think was about 1 week and six, and then, of course, on the weekends, he spent a lot of time with us. He would take us to work sometimes when he had to go, or, of course, he was involved in our Boy Scouting and all kinds of activities with us, the model rocketry and things like that. And I never felt like he was an absentee dad. I always felt like he was there. I think most nights we probably spoke on the phone long distance, and he was a very strong father figure. And strong disciplinarian and a tremendous example of work ethic and integrity and persistence. And I know my brother and sister feel the same way, that We got very lucky. We didn't get to choose our parents, but we hit the jackpot.
Well, Leonard, I have to ask you this after that is, you know, no child is perfect. And, you know, I'm sure Alan had his moments with, were there any moments where he was
let's not go there.
I'm going to go there. Was there any times when he had to like, uh-oh, you know, I got to straighten this kid out?
No, there are a couple of things that come to mind. One, well, I used to try and take him on certain calls, and one of those calls, Dave, was on the roof of a 23-story office building in downtown New Orleans, and I was doing service on a cooling tower for the building. A large facility and a large cooling tower. And he and his brother were throwing rocks off the roof, and the police came. And I thought I was going to be hauled in, but it all worked out well. And the other thing was, for some reason or other, he got mono in college. And he came home, and he didn't seem like he was motivated to go back to school. And I said, not a problem. You'll have to get a job, and you'll have to pay me for your rent and board, because if you're not going to finish college, this is not a free ride. And that's, he decided he not only wanted to go back to college, he wanted to get a number of master's degrees and whatever else.
Wow. Well, sorry about that, Alan, but, you know, we all go through those experiences, and, you know, that's what dads are for right there.
I just owe you one, Dave. That's all.
What are some things you guys like to do together that, you know, have nothing to do with science or anything like that? There's some favorite things you guys enjoy doing when you were younger or now when you get together, things you like to do together.
Go ahead, Alan.
We both like good food and we both like spending time, with the other family members. And we do quite a bit of that. Sometimes when I'm in Dallas, we get a chance to go to a car show like we did on my last trip. Or go to an aviation museum. Those kinds of things come first to mind.
Leonard?
Well, I'll have to second that.
Well, when in 2015, when Alan was involved in the great exploration of Pluto by New Horizons, what was that like for you, Leonard, when you know you're telling people, it's like, yeah, well, that's my son out there exploring Pluto?
Yeah, well, his mother and I both went up to Baltimore for the arrival of it. And, you know, needless to say, so many people said, "Are you Alan's dad?" And that was the most gratifying thing I ever heard.
And Alan, what was it like to have your parents there for that?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, a lot of us had our family members there, and a lot of us on the New Horizons team had put literally, you know, 52 weeks a year and a lot of nights and weekends into that project ever since 2001. So for 15 years, we've been working on it. And when it came time for New Horizons to actually be there, you know, our families came out literally by the hundreds. It became a bonding event for all of us, even though we were working and working hard and around the clock, to see our families finally get to see what all that work and all that travel and all those nights and weekends were about was just amazing. And I'm very grateful that, you know, my entire family came and were there to support it and to see it and to be a part of it, because it had been such a big part of my life for so long.
Well, for both of you, before I let you go, for a father or any parent out there listening to this who has a child who may have an interest in whatever it might be, any advice you want to give them to encourage them to chase their dreams like you were able to?
I think all the exposure you can give them in, you know, their interests is paramount to a good shot at realizing what they want to do. I mean, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you have to, you have to have the initial desire. And in Alan's case, he never deviated from his interest in it, and it was not hard for me to, you know, to support him in what he wanted to do.
What I would give as advice to parents or children themselves is the same thing that I taught my kids. I said, find what you love and go for it, whatever it might be. My own children, you know, one is a musician and a computer scientist working on AI, and the other two are small business owners. We had majors in college from journalism to mathematics to music to art, and those are the things that they loved. And I encourage everybody to transmit that message to young people. When you find something you love, I think the rest usually works itself out because you're so motivated to want to do well at it. And it becomes a part not just of what you go to work to do, but a part of, you know, your life and your contribution to the world. So that's my advice. Follow your heart.
Well, we have to let you go, but I want to thank both of you, Leonard and Alan Stern, for sharing your wonderful relationship with us. And especially you, Leonard, for, you know, allowing Alan to do that wonderful experiment he did with falling objects where he was studying, you know, the effects of gravity on things falling off of buildings. And Leonard, thanks for giving us such a great world-class scientist as Alan Stern, and Alan for sharing, you know, your great relationship with your dad with us.
Dave, thank you very much for inviting us on the show. It's been an honor.
Absolutely. Most grateful.
Thanks for listening to our special rebroadcast of our Father's Day episode as we mark the passing of Leonard Stern, the father of our good friend, the great planetary scientist, Alan Stern. Leonard Stern was 88 years old and passed away on September 13th. Thanks also to our guests, planetary scientist David Grinspoon and his father, legendary Harvard psychiatry professor Lester Grinspoon, who was a close friend of the inspiration for Blue Dot, the late Carl Sagan. And thanks to YouTube science communicator extraordinaire Diana Cowern and her dad Bill, who lives on the island of Kauai. Blue Dot is produced in beautiful Northern California by North State Public Radio. We're distributed by the Public Radio Exchange, better known as PRX. You can check out and share this and past episodes at mynspr.org, or better yet, subscribe to us. Our podcast is on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Mr. Matt Fidler. Our assistant producer and owner of a dog named Rocket is Ellie Johnson. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.